bringing order to the intersection of public, private, and civic. This is Infrastructure Momentum Makers.
Welcome to Infrastructure Momentum Makers, presented by Ansarada, the only software solution purpose-built to securely run complex and high-value infrastructure procurement. All your infrastructure procurement processes in one place, all in order. And join me, Ratna Amin, as I speak with the movers and shakers at the intersection of the public, private, and civic sectors about the latest breakthroughs and developments in the world of infrastructure. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by President and CEO for the Trust for Governor's Island, Claire Newman. Claire is here today to discuss managing and developing a 172-acre island in the New York Harbor, what the future holds for the island, plus so much more. Thanks so much for joining us, Claire. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You are president and CEO for the Trust for Governor's Island. First off, for any listeners who might not know what Governor's Island is, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, absolutely. We like to refer to ourselves as one of the crown jewels of New York Harbor, but more practically for people who live in the city or anywhere else and are listening, Governor's Island is a 172-acre island, just located about 8 minutes by ferry from Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn. And for many years, New Yorkers didn't know about it, and folks from around the country didn't know about it because it was totally closed to the public and used by first the U.S. Army and then the Coast Guard as a major facility and hub. And so from the early 1800s to 1966, the Army was there. It was a key part of their strategic fortification system for the city. And then in 1966, it was handed over to the Coast Guard. One of the things I find interesting about the Coast Guard's time here is that Governor's Island almost functioned like its own little six borough. There were 3,000 people living on the island. They had schools, a hospital, a dry cleaner, the only Burger King in the country that served beer, a bowling alley, like literally everything that you needed to live. And you could only get to and from the island by boat. So it wasn't until the Coast Guard left in 1996 that people even started to talk about Governor's Island as a place that was a part of the city. And through this big advocacy campaign, regional advocacy campaign, really, the federal government agreed to sell the island back to local control for a dollar. And that happened in 2003. And really, since then, Governor's Island has been operated and run with a mission to make it a fantastic resource for New York City residents. And so we've been working to sort of stitch it back into the fabric of New York City by creating fantastic public space, by delivering arts programming, by providing environmental education, and really thinking now in the most recent past couple of years about how can we expand that into job creation through the creation of a center for climate solutions. So that's the sort of long, fun history of Governor's Island. And today we get close to 1 million visits per year of people who go to school there or want to ride a bike or just take in the beautiful new park space.
Oh, that's fantastic. In your role as president and CEO for the Trust, what's your day-to-day like?
One of the things I love about this job is that it is truly all over the map. And I mean that in a good way. Similar to when the Coast Guard was here, we do function as, in some respects, a little mini city. And so, you know, we run the ferry system. If a water pipe breaks, we fix it. We get to do really fun planning for public art. We talk to tenants who want to sell food on the island to our visitors. So today, starting at 8 o'clock, we were working on fixing a water leak in a tenant space. But then I got to brainstorm with our arts and culture team about our 2024 art commission, which is focused on public education related to the climate crisis and uses one of our historic buildings. So it's a really fun mix of thinking about how we improve Governor's Island for the people who love it, how we continue to grow our mission in the months, years ahead, and also the day-to-day operational concerns and problem solving that I think is super interesting.
Could you say more about how Governor's Island is funded and how all these activities? get funding.
Yeah, that too has been an interesting process because it was a huge concern on the part of the city and the state when they were in conversations with the federal government of how is this thing going to get paid for? Again, we're 172 acres. We have 1.5 million square feet of historic buildings that need care and maintenance. And all of that adds up to be quite a lot of money. And when the federal government sold it back to local control, there were certain things they said you can't do on the island because they thought it would go against the mission. So we can't do casinos. We can't do permanent residential. Like we couldn't build condos here. They didn't want it to seem too privatized, which is, of course, makes perfect sense. And there was a real focus on how do we make the island in the decades ahead financially self-sustaining. So when we first got sold back to local control, it was jointly controlled by the city and the state, and they split the funding. Now today, it's solely in city hands. Costs about $30 million a year to operate the island, and about two-thirds of that comes from government, from the city specifically, and the other $10 million is a mix of earned revenue, money we get from leases, money we get from concessionaires and events on the island, and then generous philanthropists and other grantors who want to support the great work of the island as well.
That's really impressive that you were able to pull that mix together to sustain the operations.
Yeah, totally. And having that diversity of sources for us is really important because in any given year, you know, the way we think about it, one thing could go well, one thing could go poorly. And at the end of the day, if we're going to be responsible for making sure that we can continue to deliver the services that everyone has come to know and love, we need to have a revenue stream that's not just one thing. We can't put all of our eggs in one basket and be careful about how we grow over time so that we haven't spent beyond our means, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Please tell our listeners more about what goes on at Governor's Island, like the events, some of the cultural programs, art installations that you mentioned.
Yeah, totally. So we're now open year-round, and that's relatively new. The first year we opened to the public was 2005, and we were open a few weekends that summer, and we had about 8,000 visitors. Now we're 365, and that was a journey over those years, opening a few more days, a few more weeks, a few more months at a time. So, you know, a lot of people come to explore our new park space. We built a 43-acre world-class park that opened in 2014 and 2016. And that was a very, very important part in the growth of Governor's Island because it was a draw. When I was a kid growing up in New York, I had never heard of, let alone been to Governor's Island. And when the park opened, people were like, oh, here is this amazing new resource. We have this park that's specifically about climate mitigation and resiliency. It's this cool monument in the center of the harbor, park monument. And everyone wanted to come and explore the hills. We have like the longest slide in New York City. There's hammocks. We have a place in the park called Hammock Grove. And that was specifically in response to public comments we got during the park planning process, where the leadership at the time asked New Yorkers, what would you want to do on Governor's Island? And like tons of people just wrote hammocks. And so now we have lots of hammocks.
The hammock write-in campaign.
Totally. And it is funny because those early ferries in the morning, like you'll see people sort of racing each other to grab a hammock for the day. So we have just like the ability to come out, ride your bike around the 2.5 miles of Esplanade, enjoy the park with your friends, your kids. We have a really good, fun selection of food and beverage vendors that is sort of representative of the cultural diversity of New York. And that's really fun, you know, just sampling the different things we have to offer. I think people have favorites of what they like to eat on the island or their sort of trip with a drink overlooking the harbor. And then in the summer, we have a ton of programming. And the programming, some of it is produced by the Trust for Governor's Island itself. So we have a big arts program. We run performance series. We commission public art that's then on view to the public. But we also have arts and cultural partners who will do their own programming. And so the Audubon Society gives walking tours. West Harlem Art Fund has galleries that you can walk through. We have a camp called Playground, which is sort of a cool, free junkyard playground for parents to put their kids in. And so it really runs the gamut. one of the things we hear a lot from visitors is that they like coming back because there's always something new and a new surprise that they find on their trip here. One of the nice things about being an island that has a park but also has these physical spaces is that we can create a really diverse experience for visitors in that, yes, of course, there's park and green space, but there are also these fun places to eat and drink. There are also these fun arts tenants that you can go and visit. And then there are different kinds of hands-on activities too for people of all ages. Oh, and we host concerts. We host tons of events. So we have like concerts and runs and something for everybody.
Yeah, that sounds so fun and exciting for the city, Claire. I'm struck by how much fun and enjoyment and creativity you can bring to this place when other kinds of public agencies are in survival mode, you know, just trying to operate every day. What do you think the distinction is?
I think one of the things is the benefit and joy of being a place-based organization with a mandate to bring joy to New York City residents and to be a resource for New Yorkers, because it enables us to think about that mission and respond to what we're hearing from visitors, from the community, from elected officials in a variety of different ways. When we think about Governor's Island, we don't think about it just through the lens of, you know, I need to put in water infrastructure, or I need to run the subway, or frankly, even just I need to deliver arts for programming. It's all those things. And we get to think about literally what's the best thing we can do with this 172 acres with the resources we have. That has enabled the team here and the staff here and folks who are giving input on the island, again, to sort of think of it outside of any single vertical and really to think about this a sort of holistic, almost neighborhood-like experience in a neighborhood that is visited by people from every single zip code in the city. And I do think that mandate for us as a nonprofit, as opposed to a sort of narrower civic agency responsibility, is something that allows for the creativity to happen. And then the other thing I would say is that Governor's Island has always been such a focal point of attention, like listening to different planning processes, listening to input from a variety of different organizations, community members has been in the DNA of the making of Governor's Island really since that early advocacy campaign. Once it was decided that this was going to be a public space, everyone had an opinion about it. And it was like a cool new, like in a lot of ways, the city was getting this cool new thing. And so the muscle memory of listening to people and hearing what those interests are, and really 20 years of fairly organic planning, I think, have also lent to the flexibility and creativity of the approach here.
One of the things we like to talk about here is governance. So three organizations work in partnership, right, to maintain the island: the National Parks of New York Harbor Conservancy, the Trust for Governor's Island, and Friends of Governor's Island. How do you all work together? How do you collaborate?
Yeah, it's fun. And it's nice to have, again, in place that a lot of people care a lot about. So of our 172 acres, the National Park Service still owns 22. We own 150. That 22 acres is literally a national monument. We have park rangers here who give public tours. And a lot of it is just being in physical proximity and coordination that happens on a day-to-day staff level. And we have sort of staff level daily check-ins with NPS. We help manage and maintain their property. We'll collaborate with them on funding asks so that we can always be keeping the highest standard of care for Governor's Island. And of course, we have like all the shared space. And so it's sort of impossible for us to disentangle. The more closely we can collaborate, the better. And then the Friends are another nonprofit organization that's local, and they work directly with us and NPS to really amp up and enable us to do so much more in terms of both the outreach side of things, but then also in terms of service delivery. So they run an extraordinary volunteering program. They help raise money to support the island. They provide visitor services and will take surveys of visitors to the island so that we are getting real-time feedback on what's working and what's not. Just by way of example, we're working on a public art exhibit for this 2024 season. And The art exhibit is curated by the Trust for Governors Island in partnership with some other folks we work with. It's happening in the federal monument property. The Friends of Governors Island are helping us to raise money for it and are going to help source volunteer docents to make sure that the programming is fantastic. So it really is all three of us sort of holding hands and sharing resources to bring light to both a historic building on the island, but also to bring light to this fantastic new art exhibit that we're bringing to the island this season. So it's fun. Sometimes we disagree. Everyone needs more resources and everyone needs more help, but we're united in love of the island.
Oh, see, love can bring different organizations together.
Yeah, exactly.
So in 2023, the New York Climate Exchange, led by Stony Brook University, was selected as the anchor institution for the Center for Climate Solutions Research Lab. The exchange is set to open in 2028. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, this is another one where I think there was a very interesting actual planning process behind it. You know, as I said, the planning for Governor's Island really, in its current form, dates back at least 20 years. And really since the very beginning, since it was first, as I mentioned, sold from the federal government to local control, there was always this idea that not only would education be a great use for Governor's Island, but that we should really consider it a required use. And so we've had a high school, a public New York City DOE high school on the island for over a decade now. And it's interesting when you come out here and you walk around the island and you see the historic buildings, it's really hard not to imagine students in them and seeing it as an indoor-outdoor educational hub. And then, you know, the other really obvious aspect of Governor's Island is you ride your bike around the Esplanade, you are really close to the water in a way that New York has made huge strides on, but is still something that we don't get to necessarily experience on a day-to-day basis. We have tons of organizations out here working on issues of environment. And so this fundamental germ of an idea of bringing together the educational interest for Governor's Island, along with a programmatic focus on climate adaptation and mitigation, came together. And we did tons and tons of research on the topic. We probably spoke to over 100 different organizations from New York City, from across the country, from across the world. It was a sort of simple question, was like, how could you imagine Governor's Island adding value to the fight against the climate crisis? Or how could you imagine expanding your own excellent climate programming work here on Governor's Island? Like, how could the space add value to what you are already accomplishing as an organization who've been doing this for a very long time? And some of the feedback, we heard a lot of different things. One is that Governor's Island is an extraordinary place for bringing people from different backgrounds, different sectors together. You know, we're like literally at the gateway to New York, a few minutes by ferry, and it feels almost like neutral territory. We're part of Manhattan, but it feels like a citywide resource. We heard a lot about the need to better educate and engage the public in this conversation, which again sort of fits really well with who we are naturally. You know, it's like, yes, we can have educational uses here, but it's not in the ivory tower. It's embedded in a space where we get all these visitors and where we have the ability and, more to the point, mandate to really welcome the public and have it be a part of the process. And a whole bunch of other thematic things that really helped strengthen our thinking that this would be a good avenue to pursue when we thought again about this fundamental mission of how do we continue to bring more activity to Governor's Island? How do we continue to have it add value to New York City? So we released this request for expressions of interest, or an international competition, looking for cross-sector teams from research and academia and the private sector as well to build on Governor's Island space, research and educational space, specifically focused on how urban environments and cities can be better prepared for and better mitigate climate change impacts. And in our first competition, we got over a dozen responses that represented, I think, over 30 different academic and research institutions. We narrowed that down to the top four teams and released a follow-up RFP. And from that process, which included a pretty significant public feedback process on the different proposals. We chose, as you said, a consortium of universities led by Stony Brook as the winner. But one of the things that I think is very interesting about their proposal is that they really leaned into this cross-sector mandate. So they have universities on their team, including Georgia Tech and Pratt and Pace and NYU and Oxford, but they also have nonprofits, environmental justice organizations as part of the governance structure. They have IBM and BCG as part of the governance structure. And as they think about what they can do on the island, the idea of this being a place where you can do more than you could on your home campus because of this collaborative model is very important to them. They're also really leaning into the convening concept and this idea that we can be a place to bring different folks working in the space together to solve thorny problems. There's an infrastructure theme to this in terms of embodying and exemplifying how we can both build new buildings, but also adaptively reuse buildings in a way that is hopefully good for the 22nd century, you know, that they're producing their own energy, carbon neutrality, really aggressive goals on water recycling and zero waste. And that to us is important, both because of what we want Governor's Island to be, but also because it's such a public use case of how to do this that we hope it can also be something that other cities and other campuses can learn from.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. It sounds like a very integrated model, and we need more and more of those of integrating uses and systems in a place. So has there been any reconsideration of integrating residents on the island?
That's a great question. We will have dorms and faculty housing in some quantity as part of this. We can also do things like artist residencies, which we definitely think as we look to the future would be a cool component for the island. But I think A, because of the deed, but also B, because of the mission, probably that type of use is the right kind as opposed to more permanent, where, you know, for us, this idea of being a public space and a space for education, these things like the educational use, you know, hotel to a degree, we think is very compatible with that. People who want to come stay on the island and participate in some of these convenings, activities, et cetera, all that makes sense in a way that a condo, for example, wouldn't.
You've described how the public has a lot of say and interest in what happens at Governor Islands. And it sounds like they have a lot of practical and timely ideas, but I imagine you get some that are more far-fetched. Do you have any very far-fetched ideas that you can tell us about?
I don't know if this one comes from the public, but it's one of my favorite go-to examples is early in the planning process for Governor's Island. And I think this is another interesting thing. You know, there was a lot of solicitation of ideas from around the world, sort of in this mindset of, wow, now we have this amazing site in New York Harbor, what should we do with it? And let's solicit from, you know, every corner of the earth. And one of those, which I love, was the idea of having a SpongeBob SquarePants theme park. And I think a big fan of SpongeBob, obviously having a child, I think theme parks probably pretty quickly went out the window in terms of things for Governor's Island that would be maybe too monolithic a use and not necessarily also accessible to everybody. People always want to do swimming stuff, and we're working very hard to find ways to bring people close to the water. And then sometimes I like to try and push the envelope on stuff like this, but you do run up against just like basic safety barriers. And where we are in the harbor is like the currents are pretty intense, and probably even New York's strongest swimmers wouldn't necessarily think of this as the best place, or not certainly all parts of the island as the safest, best place to go for a dip. But there are other ways that we can create much, much better relationship to and access to the water, including expanding our kayaking uses. And actually our high school, which is, as I said, a DOE school, has a specific focus on careers in the harbor. And so the students in the school will do scuba diving practice right off the shore of Governor's Island, which is cool. It's nice to see them suit up and jump in.
That's very cool and important training.
Yeah.
A proposal we're aware of is that the Center for Urban Real Estate at Columbia proposed using land reclamation to actually reduce the size of the harbor you just mentioned and develop land. What do you think of those types of ideas?
I think there's certainly applications in New York where that could be useful. I think probably for Governor's Island, we're good at our 172 acres. One of the things we're looking at right now as part of the Climate Center, but in other cases, sort of the opposite, and thinking about where along the shoreline we can go from, you know, essentially the industrial or man-made quote-unquote waterfront edge to a more natural edge. And so in cases like that, there's areas of the land that we're looking at to be made more into wetland type, or actually to let water in and use more of a natural nature-based sort of frontage along the harbor. But it's interesting to think about in the context of New York City, like much of lower Manhattan is land reclamation. Now, from a sort of environmental management point of view, I think that's sort of less in favor than it used to be. And in general, the sort of nature-based solution, more natural shoreline where you can do it, it's not super compatible with industrial waterfront, for example, seems like a very exciting and promising area, particularly when thinking about adaptation and resiliency for city areas.
Makes sense. We know that Governor's Island has faced an issue with huge flocks of geese. They're aggressive to humans, leave a lot of waste. This is also true in other cities. Big problem. And I know you tried all kinds of solutions from strobe lights to lasers, and nothing worked until you landed on a unique way to address the issue. Can you tell our listeners about the Working Dogs program?
Yes, it is top two most popular things about Governor's Island. So we have a very unique program where we literally work with staff on Governor's Island to have working dogs who stay overnight on Governor's Island with our caretaker and come during the day, and their job is to chase geese. And they get specially trained to make sure that they chase the geese without harming any geese. And these dogs are so cute. They're so friendly. And they're so good at their jobs, and it has made an enormous difference. So we have a team of a handful of working dogs. They work in shifts. They're especially cute when they're all in a group. And the difference in the goose problem is night and day since the inception of that program. And since I've been given an opportunity to talk about animals on Governor's Island, I will also boost at the fabulous work of our horticulture team, who came up with an amazing way to deal with invasive species on the island. And we now have a seasonal team of sheep who join us from Friends of Tivoli Farm each year. And this little family flock of sheep eat all of our invasive species and means the gardeners can do the parts of their job that need human attention, while the sheep tend to weeds and invasives in an ecologically friendly way. And that has also made a big difference in terms of the way we're able to maintain and care for the island with furry friends.
Ah, that's so great. Bring animal friends into the island. Do they ride the ferry?
Yes, they do. And they get cute little working dog jackets to do so.
I love it. So when thinking about how to utilize and manage Governor's Island, do you draw inspiration from anywhere in the U.S. or abroad?
Totally. When we were doing research on the Climate Center, there were a lot of great case studies that we looked at, many in Europe, including Deltares, which is world leading in cross-sector climate solution making. And then, you know, it's funny, you draw inspiration from anywhere. When we think about our arts program, there's so much amazing stuff happening in the city, across the US. There's like a really cool art island in Japan that we looked at, one in Toronto we've been to. And then, you know, honestly, once you sort of get into this kind of work, you like, I'll be walking around New York City and I'll see a garbage can that I think is beautiful, and I'll take a picture of it and be like, we should have garbage cans like this, or like a cool new bike rack, you know? So it can really range and scale from those small things, you know, where you're always thinking about, oh, how could we improve this urban environment, to like way larger scale, just broad planning principles. That's part of the fun of it for sure.
Yeah. And it seems fun that you can actually get from idea to manifesting something maybe a little sooner, faster than a lot of other entities.
It's nice to have that balance of, you know, replacing garbage cans against like an 8-year campus development project, because you can mix up having that satisfaction of seeing things change and be implemented quickly, in addition to the sort of longer term, more comprehensive planning processes that need to happen.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some 8-year trash cans out there.
Totally. That's true. Good point.
As we look ahead to the future of Governor's Island, what makes you most excited?
I'm excited about a couple of things. One is, how do we bring together in a really thoughtful way these fundamental three ideas of the public space, visitors who are coming maybe just to enjoy the park, with our arts programming and with our climate programming, because I think somewhere in the center of those three things is a real sweet spot around public engagement and creating points of entry for lots of types of people into a like really pressing issue of the time. And so this idea that, you know, you could come to Governor's Island and have a super unique experience that involves you exploring this natural place on foot or on bike, also encountering art, whether it's speaking to issues of environmental justice or the climate crisis or something else, and find yourself learning more about how you can actually proactively help with climate issues is exciting to me. And then, you know, this touches on a lot of what we do, whether it's about how we operate the island or think about infrastructure, when we think about tenancy, is this idea of being a sort of mini model neighborhood or model city. And that because we, despite having been around for a very, very long time and having a long history, in some respects, we're at the beginning of our infrastructure journey. And so we have this opportunity to leapfrog and be a showcase for the latest and greatest in solutions for urban environments, whether, again, that be in how we've built the park, which is very cutting edge with respect to water management and resiliency, whether it be how we adaptively reuse buildings, whether it's the sort of way they're using mass timber to do the classroom space as part of the climate center, but also just like, how do we manage waste on the island to get to zero waste? How do we think about mail delivery in a way that has no carbon footprint? And that's exciting, the idea that because we're smaller, because we're starting our journey, because we're a nonprofit, that we can push ourselves and try and make all these decisions in a way that can be a cool thing to see and a great example to how the city more broadly and other cities and coastal environments can look forward to climate adaptation solutions.
Wow, that's really exciting and a reminder for everybody to pay attention to Governor's Island, because we need examples and proof of concept in order to move the ball forward everywhere, like to see what we can actually learn from real things on the ground.
Totally. The other thing I would say is just, I love that Governor's Island continues to be a hub of education for kids of all ages. Like, we just launched a field trip program as part of our Climate Living Lab umbrella. We have this amazing high school. We're going to have college students. So this idea that we have like a pipeline and a real way for New York City kids and other kids to move through their educational process in part on Governor's Island, you know, again, that's part of what we're excited about as well.
Claire, I'm sure the work you can do managing such a complex place can be stressful. Where do you find order in the chaos?
That's a great question. I think I've definitely, as I've gotten older, gotten better at, you know, at the end of the day, actually having the day end. I love playing sports and games, like anything. I like to play basketball. I feel like when you get your heart rate up and sweat, it's a good way to create order. And I like doing things like crosswords and other little puzzles. I like to hang with friends, and obviously my family is a big part of it. But I sometimes laugh with people at work because I think everyone has activities at the office that they can do as a sort of comfort blanket. When you have huge problems that you need to solve, it's like, well, I could definitely put a few things into an Excel table. And it's going to make me feel really good. And I'm going to be a little bit more organized. And I do feel like everyone I work with has some version of that. They're not all the same, but an activity that you can do and like just get it done and complete it and feel like, all right, I'm now ready to move forward with the complicated, thorny stuff.
Yes, I can relate to that. The spreadsheet, the to-do list, or the process diagram.
Yeah, exactly. This is definitely a place where everyone who works here like loves Governor's Island. And I do think that that is a little bit unique, just loving the place, loving the mission, and having a good team that like actually cares about what we're doing is another good order in the chaos anchor.
Yeah, makes sense. So one last question before I let you go. Is there any major infrastructure project anywhere in the world that's on your bucket list to go and see one day?
Oh man, I should be prepared for that. I don't even know that you would call this future looking, but I've never seen like one of the big canals. And I recently watched the video of boats going through the Panama Canal. And I was like, I'd really love to see that. It's sort of crazy.
It's crazy. I've watched those videos on YouTube with my son.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's sort of shocking.
Seems fun. And then there's a lot of more sort of future-oriented things that we should probably all be studying and thinking about, like geothermal, and like I'd like to see like a real wind turbine thing out on the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
That would be cool as well.
Clara, your work sounds amazing. It's so good to see you. Thank you for participating.
It's nice to hang out with you.
I'm just like in awe of what you're doing at Governor's Island. Thank you so much for being on Infrastructure Momentum Makers. We've loved this conversation. I've learned so much, and thanks for sharing your wisdom with the listeners.
No, thanks so much for having me. It was a really fun conversation and great to see you all.
Our guest today, once again, was Claire Newman. Claire, thanks so much for joining the show to tell us about the unique place that is Governor's Island. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you all once again for listening to our show. If you're enjoying it, please make sure to leave a review so more people can find us. Until next time, I'm Ratna Amin, and this has been Infrastructure Momentum Makers, presented by Ansarada.